Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Trust excellence built on 40 years of experience. Visit zurichcorporate.ie to learn more about the Zurich Master Trust.
You're welcome back. 51551 is the text number. Health Minister Stephen Donnelly has said that the health service is seeking to make savings of nearly 430 million euro this year and to put in place a range of new productivity measures. The minister's comments come as a new report shows large increases in healthcare funding and staffing in recent years has not been matched by a similar level of rising activity in Ireland's hospitals. Well, to get some reaction to this, I'm joined now by Professor Matthew Sadlier, who's chair of the IMO Consultants Committee. Professor Sadlier, very welcome indeed to the programme.
Thank you very much. The number
of outpatient appointments being carried out per consultant in hospitals has been falling, the minister says. It's not consultants' fault, he says quite quickly afterwards. Do you accept what he's saying?
I do accept. Well, I accept that it's not the consultant's fault. What I accept is that my disappointment in the report that's released today is that it doesn't look at outcomes and it doesn't look at clinical outcomes. It only seems to look at productivity and how many patients each doctor is seeing per day, per hour, per minute. And definitely from the time I started working in the health service, where it was acceptable to see a patient in 5 minutes, patient expectations are nowhere near that today. Mm-hmm. People, you know, I know the minister at lunchtime quoted and said that he's spoke to a doctor who said they saw 50 patients a day. Like, that's one patient every 10 minutes. You know, patients nowadays have a higher level of health expectation. They have a higher level of expecting a holistic treatment to their care.
So when the minister says that the productivity level is not commensurate with the investment, is your response, it's not because of patient expectations? Is that it?
And patient outcomes. Like, we shouldn't be doing reports just based on how many patients a doctor sees per day, per hour. What we should be doing a report is on what is the outcome of patients. And if you look at the cancer strategy, you know, the number of cancer survivors has increased by 50% over 10 years. They're the sort of metrics we should be looking at and looking at how our investment is translating to outcome, not looking at just simply how many patients a doctor can see a day. Now, absolutely, are there efficiencies in the system and how can we make the system better? Absolutely, the system needs...
But you're saying this type of research is too simplistic.
Oh, it's absolutely too simplistic to be making broad-ranging statements about doctor productivity or the whole service productivity.
But from a taxpayer point of view as well, I suppose you have to look at the payback that the Exchequer is getting, because the taxpayer is getting. The health budget has increased by over 8 billion euro between 2016 and 2022, and staffing numbers have increased by 30%. Yet we have long waiting lists. Yet we have people waiting for an awful long time when they get into hospital and A&E and so on. And now we learn that productivity is not keeping pace. Surely it's a reasonable question to ask as to why not.
Well, we need to look at that analysis in greater depth. But as I say, you know, a patient's journey within the healthcare service now, each individual patient's journey is a lot more complex than it ever was before. We offer a much more holistic care than we did before. I remember when I worked as an intern, if somebody got diagnosed with cancer, they came into hospital, they had their surgery, they might have had their chemo or radiotherapy, and they left hospital. Now they have a holistic, multidisciplinary approach. They see occupational therapy, they see psychology, they have a much more holistic care package, which, you know, the outcomes for the patients are better. That is there in the cancer report. And those better outcomes cost more money.
Okay, so you tell me and the minister then, how could productivity and outcomes improve?
Well, there's a couple of things. We are definitely looking for an increase in infrastructure spending. If you don't have enough beds in a hospital to put patients in, it is less efficient in seeing patients. It is a lot less efficient seeing a patient in an emergency department on a trolley than it is seeing a patient on a proper ward with the proper equipment nearby. I know of a surgeon who's been appointed, who's on our committee, who was appointed before the operating theatre was built in his specialty. You know, we have surgeons who have limited operating theatre time. We have deficits across the system in other staff. That means the staff we have cannot operate at their maximum productivity.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the stuff you mentioned there would require maybe capital investment.
It absolutely requires capital investment.
Why not seek productivity and efficiencies with the resources that we have first? For example, would it not be more efficient and more productive for the public health system if more consultants were to take the public-only contract?
Well, it would be. it would be, if more consultants took the public only contract, it would mean that more patients are seen through the public healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And we have said before that that's going to involve less money coming from the private insurers into the public hospitals, who at the moment provide a certain percentage of the budget, so which will increase the cost of the care.
There are the ramifications, right? Yeah. But in terms of increasing the productivity and efficiency in the public system, why aren't more consultants taking up the public-only contract? Is it about 50% at this stage?
We're somewhere in and around the 50% of the existing consultant group. Obviously, all new appointees have to is the only contract on offer for new appointees.
So why are some dragging their heels or dragging their feet on this one?
Because it depends on where their services are, how their services are set up. Are their services set up to offer the efficiencies that you're saying?
I don't understand that now. What does that mean?
Well, as you know, with the public consultant contract, it allows for working at the weekends. Now, as I've said here many times before, we have no ideological problems with consultants working at weekends, except if you're going to work at a weekend, you want them to work effectively. So if I'm to work effectively at the weekend, you know, we need to have nursing staff, we need to have health and social care professional staff, administrative staff.
Surely if consultants led the way to work weekends, maybe that's another productivity problem, that not all consultants work weekends.
Well, we all work weekends, but that is an on-call. What we're talking about is doing regular work weekend time. But that is an individual issue in hospitals about making sure that when doctors are on site, that they are working at their maximum productivity.
That's not an individual issue. That's a structural issue, isn't it?
Well, I accept the definition. It is a structural issue, but it's a structural issue that management will have to solve for
us. But that would increase productivity wholesale, wouldn't it?
It would and it wouldn't, because if I'm going to work on a Saturday as part of my regular working hours, as the contract allows, unless you employ somebody to cover my clinic on Tuesday, I won't be there on Tuesday. So all you're doing is moving work from one part of the week to another part of the week without necessarily increasing the overall productivity of the service.
So when the minister says, and maybe he's being very fair to doctors and consultants, that it's not doctors or consultants' fault, based on what you're saying, maybe it is a little bit doctors or consultants' fault.
I don't think it's individual. Well, obviously, look, I mean, you have 3,500 doctors or consultants working in within the system, and I can't speak for every single one of them, obviously. But I think to achieve the gross increases in productivity that they want, there needs to be a number of service issues dealt with. The infrastructure in regards to computerisation and digital patient records is a big thing that I've talked about here on multiple occasions that would massively increase our productivity.
That's a long-standing issue.
That is a long-standing issue.
Okay. Can I move you on from that for one second?
Because I
know you were on this programme recently talking about social media and the impact of social media. Now, the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, said at the weekend that the use of social media by our children is the public health challenge of our time, and that they're seeking to regulate more sternly. What is your view on that?
Well, as I've called for many times, we need to regulate social media. Like, we are running an experiment on our children, and as the Surgeon General in the US said, our children only have one childhood. We don't have a second bite at the childhood here. We have to make changes now. And it is a bit frustrating to hear the Taoiseach to talk about this when, you know, the Minister for Education had an opportunity to put in a hard rule about social media and mobile phone use in primary schools and backed away from it and said that it's a voluntary code.
Would you have expected more to be done by now?
I would 100% have expected more to be done. You know, it should have been done the day these companies started. You know, we should have...
Norma Foley didn't get the backing, though, did she, that she needed from the school? She didn't get full support in the plan.
I mean, I don't know the necessary background to the political infrastructure, but what I know is that we need to pass legislation. We needed to pass it 5 years ago, and we need to pass it now, that guarantees that, you know, everybody who has a social media account, that social media account needs to be absolutely verified through some sort of independent identification, so we can verify the age of the social media account holder. The companies themselves have an age limit depending on which company, but I think it's roughly 13 for most of the companies. That needs to be reinforced. And I absolutely, and as the IMO conference, we called on that there should be a ban on smartphone use in primary schools across the country.
So what Micheál Martin was talking about yesterday was that Fianna Fáil is proposing to put aside funding. Now, we don't have a lot of detail on this, so we don't know how much funding and exactly how that money would be used, but funding would be put aside to try and reduce the use of smartphones in schools. And one of the things he referenced was where one particular school in the country where a contract was drawn up between the teachers and the parents and the children, and everyone agreed that you wouldn't use smartphones. And I don't know why you'd need funding for that particular proposal, but apparently you did. So is that the sort of thing that you think needs to be done?
It absolutely needs to be done. Like, we have, you know, we've an age limit for drinking alcohol, we've an age limit for smoking cigarettes, we've an age limit for engaging in other addictive behaviours. Mm. This, as we know, is an addictive behaviour. There should be an age limit on it. Now, whether that's 13, you know, whatever number that lands on is for debate. But definitely within primary schools, and I think it's a case of just, you know, actually going forward and doing something rather than talking about it.
Well, it's very instructive that some Silicon Valley CEOs of tech companies don't allow their own children to use smartphones. But you mentioned, and the Thornish mentioned, he said the damage that social media is doing to young people and children. You're a doctor. What damage is it doing?
Well, I mean, the Surgeon General in the US report that I've quoted a number of times, you know, has said that the introduction of social media has caused 300,000 cases of depression among US college-age students. And if social media hadn't been introduced, that those cases wouldn't be there. That's not me speaking, that's the US Surgeon General speaking. You know, we know that there's damage in regards to, you know, the exposure to extreme political viewpoints that we heard at our conference down in Killarney last weekend. We know there's difficulty in body image, eating disorders. We know that girls are particularly vulnerable to, you know, adherence to social norms, which gets magnified on social media. This is an issue that is crying out for regulation. It has been on the cards for, I know it's relatively recently in the broad scope of technology, you know, it's 10 years or so, but it's about time that we stopped talking about regulation and we actually made an active effort to introduce statutory enforceable regulation.
Okay, and just to be clear on what exactly that would look like, because what we're hearing on this programme is that age verification is very difficult to implement, or it's very difficult to enforce. Even if you bring it in, it's very difficult to enforce. Because we also saw then this decision by Meta, the social media giant, to reduce the age limit from 16 to 13. Micheál Martin said that he didn't agree with that, but he can't stop it.
Yes, but he can stop it. He's the legislator. Surely the legislators can introduce laws to stop things and create things. That's a bit like saying if Ford in the morning said that their cars had to be driven by people under the age of 13, that we said, well, sorry, we can't do anything about that. You know, they have to, as legislators, step up to the plate and actually legislate these issues.
Okay, so ban the use of social media by children under the age of 13. Would that be what you'd be recommending?
Well, personally, absolutely. And at our IMO conference, that's what, you know, as our organisation passed as a motion, primary school is fundamentally 12, 13, where, you know, where the cutoff comes there.
Yeah. A listener says primary schools don't allow pupils to use phones during school time. Parents of primary school pupils purchase them and allow them to use them at home. I think the problem here is an awful lot of us, parents and teachers and so on, doctors, don't really know how these things work. They don't understand the algorithms or the code behind it. And it just strikes me, and maybe I'm straying into territory that we're not qualified to talk about here, but in terms of accounts that the revenue has auditors and they can audit books, maybe the state should have coders that would go in and audit the algorithms and the codes of these tech companies. Maybe that's an idea, I don't know, because how do you know if they're complying with regulation, even
if a food company, I won't mention any particular, if they issued a soft drink into the market and said to the food regulation authority, we're actually not going to tell you what's in this, we won't let you test it, but, you know, you should allow this to be sold to children and they can drink as much as you like, do you think a food company would get away with that?
Yeah, well, I think the answer is, you've asked a rhetorical question that I think an awful lot of people respond to every time we talk about this subject, the impact of social media and smartphones on young people especially, we do get a big feedback to 51551. Let me read you one. Snapchat and FOMO is the worst thing ever for teenagers. Years ago, you wouldn't know what others were up to, never mind a document 5-minute update on everything, says one listener. And on they come to 51551. For the moment, Professor Matthew Sadlier, Chair of the IMO Consultants Committee, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.